Spring has sprung, and big savings are in full bloom at Menards. Visit Menards Garden Center for everything you need to get your garden growing. Choose from hundreds of beautiful, colorful flowers, lush trees and shrubs, and everything in between. Menards Garden Center is back in bloom. Stop in today to get your garden on. Check out fresh deals happening now at Menards.
Save big money at Menards.
Second hour, beautiful, gorgeous day here in Nashville. Darren McFarland, Willie Donick, Derek Mason, with you. The SEC women are in town at Bridgestone Arena, and they are underway. Last night, Vanderbilt kicked off the action beating Texas A&M, and Alabama beat Auburn in the nightcap. A team that is waiting for their game Friday night. Lady Vols coach Kelly Harper is on the line with us. Coach, good morning. How you doing?
I'm great. Thanks for having me on.
Well, thanks for doing this. You know, you said a lot of really good things to the media yesterday, but I'm just going to be totally honest. What stood out to me is Girl Scout cookies, and you really got my attention with that. Yes, I'm a little bit hollow, and I love to talk about Girl Scout cookies, but where did that come from? You said you're superstitious, and that's your thing? Tell us a little bit more. I need to hear the story.
Well, really, it's they asked me if I had anything, and I said I didn't, except for, I mean, occasionally I have Girl Scout cookies. And so, maybe not every conference tournament, but most conference tournaments that I've coached in, somehow we found some Girl Scout cookies in our room. So that's the closest thing I've had to doing something, you know, every year. I think, you know, each year, each team is, and you know, you're in different seeds. Everything looks different. Your schedule looks different. But I don't know. It seems happier if you got Girl Scout cookies.
Well, I hope they're thin mints.
Did you pack? Well, hold on, D-Mace. Let's find out. Did you pack some, or was that kind of your plea? Like, can somebody help? And what are you looking for?
No. I hadn't really thought about it until I was asked, and I got thinking about it. So now, didn't have time to go get any, and so now I was driving back. We were driving back from we had media after our shoot around this morning, and I was just, you know, keeping an eye out for, you know, potential pop up stands for the cookies. I did not see any, so I'll be on a hunt this afternoon. We got a little bit of downtime right now before our practice, so I'll probably find some.
Kelly, I'm not even kidding. This is true. Cliff McCardle, who runs our promotions department, he does a fantastic job. His daughter has been selling Girl Scout cookies, and I bought two boxes of Tagalongs and two boxes of Thin Mints that he's got in his possession that are mine. They're paid for. And I'm, you know, because of this appearance, I mean, I'm willing to help you out if you want Tagalongs or Thin Mints. I'm just saying.
Well,
unopened, unused, brand new boxes.
Listen, that is a great start. So if you're going to start with two boxes, those are the two I'd start with. So,
ooh, okay.
What's wrong with those two?
Okay. By the way, welcome to Nashville. So what is it like sitting here waiting all the way until Friday night before your girl's going to suit up and play?
Yeah, well, so we've got two long days. So
yeah.
Today we're packed in. We have to we had an early shoot around time today, so at 8:20 we were on the court. So you're getting up pretty early, getting over there. Now we go back, let the players rest a little bit. We'll go actually have another practice, which will be more game specific. Even though we don't know our opponent yet, we'll still try to get a little bit more game specific at that practice, and then we'll let the players go over tonight to watch a little bit, at least part of the Alabama and Georgia game. Part of that is, yeah, to watch. We can watch that in our hotel rooms. But the bigger thing there is just to get them in the venue, see the vibe, feel the vibe. You know, understand what it looks like in there, so that hopefully when they take the court on Friday night, they're a little bit more confident and comfortable.
To be honest, I don't know the answer to this. I'm not sure if they're available. I know you had sustained a couple of really key injuries that you've been dealing with and trying to overcome. I'm not sure if they're available, and if they're not, how does that affect, you know, what you guys are trying to accomplish here?
Yeah, well, the beginning of the year, from the beginning of the year till now, we've lost four. Mm. And we didn't have one at all throughout the season, and then We had one miss the first 2 months, and then we got her back. And then early February, I can't remember exactly, early February, late January, we lost one that's going to be done. And then three weeks ago, we lost another one that potentially could be done. So we don't have any of those four. We have three of those four, actually, sitting out right now. So, you know, the biggest one here recently was Jordan Horston, and she was our leading scorer, creator, best rebounder, best defender. She just did everything for us. And, you know, we just don't have the ability to have anyone step in and give that. She's a 6'2 frame that can do everything. And so what we've had to do, we've tweaked some things offensively, a little bit defensively, and how we're going to approach the games, just to help these players that we do have find a little bit more success.
I know, Kelly, it's impossible, and you've probably been asked this so many times over the years, but here goes. Because of her impact was so huge in this state and so huge around women's basketball, so huge around the Lady Vols and their brand, you know it all too well, Pat Summitt. And I wanted to know just maybe what you've picked up, what you picked up over the years that maybe you still incorporate. And two, do you change your mentality once you get into this setting? Because now you're in your conference tournament, and after that it's the NCAA tournament. And you know how this is. And every time, now you're in the stages of when you lose, you're done. And the next stage, when you lose, your season is over. Do you coach differently, or do you take the same approach?
I think you do some things the same. What we try to do, our preparation, we try to keep the same at this point. And that's, again, just for the comfort, or your players know what to expect. You don't want to get to postseason, spring something new on them, a different method of going through a scouting report or something like that. You want to keep things consistent. But I do think, the urgency feels a little different. I think you got to be able to handle that. And I think each team is different, and I think every year is different, and how you approach things. And we've got a group that we're just working real hard with to try to push to be the best they can be every day in that moment. What is that? Today that means our shoot around, our practice, our pregame meal tomorrow, just everything. And just really enjoy the moment. I think that's really important. And I think coaches, we've got, as a coach, I want to present that confidence and the, excitement about the tournament, because I think eventually they're going to feed off of how we feel.
We'll talk with Kelly Harper, Lady Vols head basketball coach. Now, Coach, you girls have lost three of the last four games. Granted, two of the losses were against the number one team, South Carolina, and then LSU. Do you contribute that to fatigue? And if so, does this break help your team?
No, I don't think of that as fatigue for us. I think we hit our fatigue a little bit earlier in the year. I think you hit it every year. The last ones, I think, you're just playing really good teams, and I think that's part of it. But I think every year you have to push through a mental fatigue and a physical fatigue. I think both, and I think the mental fatigue is actually a little harder to push through than the physical at times. And I think it hits different teams at different times, and for us it was kind of all at once when we kind of had our injuries. And so I think we're through that now. I think we feel pretty good. And as a coach, we try to do everything we can to keep the physical fatigue from setting in during the season. But when you talk about this break, we tried to use this break to make sure that we had their legs under us. So they were off Monday and Wednesday of this week to try to just make sure that we had a lot of energy going into the tournament.
Now, with girls going down and your best player obviously out, are you, as a coach, are you confident and are you happy with the ladies that have stepped up in the place of those that have went down?
Oh, absolutely. They keep fighting. I mean, they play hard. They practice hard. They're giving you everything they can. And you know, we ask them to, you know, to step up and be better. They're really taking on that challenge. So I'm really, really proud of them and how they've handled the adversity. And, I expect a lot of them. You know, I expect them to be able to go out and make plays mm-hmm. against any of our opponents. And, we've had some good outings, since we lost Horson. We've had some wins and some losses. But throughout it, some good outings that it gets you excited about what we still can do.
Kelly Harper is with us, head coach of the Lady Vols, as they get prepared for the SEC tournament. They play tomorrow night. They play the winner of Alabama and Georgia. Coach, you talked about what you want your players to do to get a feel for what's going on tonight as you watch the game. What about from a scouting standpoint? You're familiar with both of these teams that you might play. You don't have a whole lot of time to put in a game plan. That's always the interesting part about tournament play. So will you weigh a lot about how your team matches up, or how much will you be watching that game tonight to see, like, who's hot and who has a big game?
Well, we'll be watching it very closely. We have scouting reports on both teams ready to go. We understand what both teams are going to present, and they're going to show something a little different each team. So you're not really, you know, we go over to practice today. We will do a few things for Alabama, and we'll do a few things for Georgia specifically for them. But for the most part, we'll kind of go over and work a little bit more on what we need to do that would work for either team. And then use our shoot around tomorrow. Our shoot around tomorrow for, game specific. So like plays that, either team might run that we need to work through. Live scouting, you're there, you're watching it in person, getting a sense for what they're doing in this game. And we have a pretty good idea of what we'll see, for either team though.
Kelly, before we let you go, I'm going to get nostalgic on you. I was a young announcer, former basketball player at Vanderbilt. I got the job as the color person on the women's side in the mid-90s for Vanderbilt. Cherie Sam, Nishima Hillman, really, really good Vanderbilt team. But, of course, the Lady Vols were the best of the best. I had so much fun watching those two teams compete. Those were some great days, some unbelievable crowds, as you remember. Fully well, but man, I just wanted to share that. You were, of course, a big part of those teams that I was announcing. So, man, that was such a fun time and a big springboard.
Oh, absolutely. And it was incredible because you had all this going on in our state, you know, and it was, you're right. I was in high school, and I would come to those games just to watch them because, you know, you've got so many times there during that spell, you're looking at number one, number two in the country. And it was really cool to watch that. And then it was really cool to be a part of that because, you know, we had some played against some great players and had some great games, great competitions. And you're right, the attendance was fabulous.
Do you remember were you at the game where I think it was the first game at Memorial Gym that they sold out? I remember when I was a freshman, I went to see Vanderbilt play Tennessee. It was a good crowd, but it was a couple years later. I think it was the year Vanderbilt went to the Final Four. They had Heidi Gillingham and that crew. Were you at that game? I think it was one of the great games.
I am 90% sure that I was at the game as a spectator.
Yes.
I'm pretty sure I was able to come. I drove over. This is funny. I drove over because I was a sophomore in high school when I did this. My friends and I drove over. It was a 1 o'clock game, or maybe we got there at 1 o'clock for a 7 o'clock game. And we sat outside, played board games, so that we could get in and get a good seat. That was before I didn't know I could call coach and get on the pass list. I didn't know. That would have been a whole lot easier, but, we kept made a day of it and spent the whole afternoon just sitting in line and, just enjoying some, you know, top basketball.
Yep. And, you certainly developed into a great player in your own right, after watching that game. So Kelly, thanks a lot for joining us. Best of luck in the tournament, going forward here and on through the rest of the season.
All right. Appreciate you guys.
Good stuff. Kelly Harper, head coach, Tennessee Lady Vols, again, they play tomorrow night at the SEC tournament, Bridgestone Arena, right downtown. Of course, once upon a time, mm-hmm. Kelly Jolly, White County High School, Sparta, great high school player, decorated, and then, of course, was the point guard on those unbelievable teams with Shamiko Holtzclaw and that crew. They were the team back in the day, late 90s, basically.
They play the winner of Alabama, Georgia.
Yes.
And they'll be the 8:30 tip Friday night. So just think about that. The tournament started last night, and their first game is Friday night at 8:30.
They will be well rested.
That's a long day.
I was going to say, it kind of can work against you, though, you know, sitting around all day. What do you do?
And you could play Alabama, who's got two games under their belt. Now, they could be fatigued, but they could be – they're certainly going to be game ready.
Yep.
You know, of course, Georgia may have only played one. But either way, you're playing against a team that's already been out there and been through it.
Yep. Good stuff from Kelly Harper. We'll come back. More of the DDC next. Appreciate Lady Vols head coach Kelly Harper joining us on the program. SEC Women's Basketball Tournament in town. The men are down in Tampa at Amalie Arena. We'll talk with Vince Ferrara on Monday. That's where he's from, so he's actually going to go down and cover the men's basketball tournament. So we'll talk to him about that next week. So as everything is going to be
happening.
What's
it, down in Orlando?
It's Tampa.
Tampa.
It's at Amalie Arena. Okay.
Well, that'd be fun.
I don't think so.
You don't think so?
It'll be fun to go down there.
It belongs here.
No, I'm saying it belongs here, yes. But I'm saying the tournament should be a fun tournament because there are so many teams that have legitimate shots to win the SEC tournament.
And let me just say this, Willie. I'm prefacing by saying I'm glad the women are here because I think my point is an SEC tournament needs to be here every year, whether it's the women or the men. And so I don't want that to go away, and it's not. I think the men are here the next 8 years after this year, right?
I'd say it's pretty covered after this year.
Yeah.
I think you won't have anything to worry about.
It won't come up no more. Something we will not be talking about.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you what people are talking about in Indianapolis. Have you guys seen this?
What's that?
People are talking about Kenny Pickett's hands, man. Holy moly.
Boy. Here we go.
It is not good.
Well, doesn't he have something? He had an injury, and he's been trying to.
I don't know, but he measured like an 8.5. I don't think I've ever seen
that. That is a small hand.
I know, and as you can imagine, the memes are poof. It's brutal.
But I read something. Did you see this, Elijah? Am I making this up? He injured his hand at some point.
That's
and
why
he's been
wears
trying
the gloves,
to.
I think it's because he did injure his hand, but I don't.
So he's been trying to like do some exercises, some training to try to. You know, spread out the tendons and stuff, get some more. I don't know how much. What is that going to do? It's like Bobby Brady in the Brady Bunch. He's trying to stretch himself out.
Cut off his arm and put a bionic hand on him, okay? Cut off his hand and put a bionic one.
So it's the opposite of OJ when you put the gloves on.
Exactly.
The gloves are too big.
He and Darren can go to the same place.
It's more of the
He has to
Skywalker
get his knee
thing.
Replaced. He can get his he can get his hand replaced.
Well, let's not jump to getting my knee replaced yet, okay? Let's do the damn MRI first, okay, before we get to that.
I'm saying not now, but I'm saying down the line there. This is what's so funny about this whole thing, okay? The young man was a phenomenal college quarterback. Phenomenal college quarterback. And if I can recall, the footballs are a little bit fatter in college than they are in the NFL. If I can recall. I haven't, you know, picked up a college football in so long. But from my knowledge, it's a little bit fatter. So if he was able to throw a college football and have success at doing it, why in the hell is this such a big deal? I don't get it. Like the guy, I can see if, you know, balls are slipping out of his hands in college and, you know, he was throwing ducks down the field and all this other stuff. I can understand. But that is not the case. So, again, I know they make a big thing out of everything at the combine. But to me, if I'm a scout, I do what a scout is supposed to do. Watch the film. And the film will tell me if he could throw an NFL football or not.
Well, look, it's a big deal. It's always been a big deal. I think it's just become public knowledge that it's always been a big deal. The quarterback's hand size. This is not some new phenomenon, but it is a reality. And look, if you want to kind of squash that, Joe Burrow measured a 9.
Exactly.
So typically, you know, when you go 9, people go, because Ryan Tannehill's a 9. And I don't know if you guys see it, but people do say stuff about his hands. Hey, he's got little hands, and that's why he threw a pick. And people do say that. I've seen those comments.
That has nothing to do with you.
I know, but I'm just telling you, Derek, people do that. Whether it's right or wrong, I'm telling you, people reference Ryan Tannehill's hand size, which was a 9, too, because typically – you know, a lot of these guys, they got meat hooks, as you know. Some of these quarterbacks have gigantic hands, like a 10. But Joe Burrow's a 9, but I think Kenny Pickett measured like an 8.5. I don't even think I've ever seen an 8.5. So as you can imagine.
That's like Maddox.
I mean, people are just going to town on his hand size.
But again, is that going to tell me whether he's going to be a really good football player, a really good quarterback or not?
Well, you tell me why they make it. Why do teams make it such a big deal about it? Then? Why
honestly,
is it important?
I guess because, you know, if you're in wet climate or cold climate, maybe, you know, you might have a situation where the ball slips out of your hand. But that's why you have gloves.
Yeah.
You know, Tom Brady wore gloves.
What about, holding on to the ball? They think you're more prone
to... You tuck the ball, you shouldn't fumble. I mean, even if I have big hands, if a quarterback has big hands and he's sitting out there dangling the football like it's a loaf of bread and one of those, you know, 6'6", 270-pound guys come swiping, I don't care how big your hands are, that ball's going to be on the ground. You know? Just look at his college film. Was there any – did it affect him in a college game, throwing a football? And if it didn't, then okay, we should be good. If it did, I understand why it's such a big deal. That's just me. You know, we look at so many things that means nothing.
Okay, tell us another one. What's another one that means nothing?
You a 40-yard dash. 40-yard dash means nothing. Nothing at all. It doesn't. Nobody's running 40 yards, just a 40-yard sprint in shorts and in just cleats with no shoulder pads. You got to understand, some of the greatest wide receivers ran 4.5s, 4.6s. You have the 4.3 guys and 4.4s. It's all about technique. Now, some guys are just fast. That's just the way it is. But a lot of it has to do with technique. You show me a bunch of guys that ran a 4.3, and I can show you a bunch of guys that ran a 4.3 and didn't have no success in the NFL. None whatsoever. So to me, if you are a 4.5 guy, you know, 4.55 somewhere around there or lower, then you're good. Now, if you're a 4.7, 4.8 guy, then, you know, we need to really think about it. You need to be about 6.6. We need to move you to tight end. But to me, the 40-yard dash, nobody's running complete 40-yard dashes anymore. Now, I want you to be more quick getting in and out of your breaks, more sudden. And a 40-yard dash doesn't tell me you're more sudden and can get in and out of your breaks. I want to see the cone drills, the 3 cone drills and all that. That tells me if you can get in and out of a break very quickly. Not a 40-yard dash. That's just me, though.
So it's just so maybe they're using it as a measurement. I get it. You're right. You're not doing that. That's never going to present itself in a game. But I guess there's got to be you need to know if somebody's fast or not, right?
Yeah. You need to know if somebody can run. Okay. And typically, a lot of these wide receivers, if they're of the top of the top, like the top 15 wide receivers, all of them are really about a 4.5, 4.4, 4.5. Rarely are you going to see the 4.3, 4.2 guy, okay? But you're going to see more sub 4.4s and 4.5 guys than you do 4.3 and 4.2. So to me, if you can run, if you have speed to you, then that's all I need to know. You don't have to be a 4.2 guy. You don't have to be a 4.3 guy. But if you can run, there's a difference. I've seen a bunch of fast guys that get in the game. They look slow. And I've seen a bunch of guys that tested slow get out in the game, and you're like, man, it's too – can't nobody catch them. So, that's again, that's just me.
Sure. All right, we'll come back and continue the discussion on the other side. Don't forget Elliot Friedman today coming up at 1 o'clock. Speaking of fast, we'll talk with Chris Sanders at noon. But first, Willie, you're going to tell everybody about Lee Company.
All right, let's talk Lee Company, 615-567-1000 or LeeCompany.com. Lee Company, proud sponsor of Nashville Predators hockey. Rough night for the Predators last night in Seattle. They'll be back at it Sunday night in San Jose, a 7 o'clock start. Darren will start the pregame at 6, and Lee Company will be front and center with their sponsorship. Also, Lee Company has the home maintenance plan. I keep telling you, hey, weather's warm. You might have had to crank up the AC these last couple of days, and if you haven't, you might in the next couple of days. It's going to be very warm. Have you had your air conditioning checked? If you haven't, it's a great time to call Lee Company and introduce yourself to them and all the great services they have. 615-567-1000. They'll come out, they'll check out the unit, make sure it's running properly and efficiently, and they'll take care of the problem. And while you're at it, ask them about their home maintenance plan, where you get the year-round service for all of your functions at home. Air conditioning, heating, plumbing, and electric. It's the home maintenance plan from Lee Company. 615-567-1000 or LeeCompany.com.
Go to thegamenashville.com/deals to check out Nashville's best deals. Right now, half off Woodhouse Spa, half off dining at Mainstay and Hard Rock Cafe, half off Brooklyn Bowl, plus $50 free with a purchase of $100 in downtown dollars. Remember, check out those deals at thegamenashville.com/deals. And I wasn't kidding with Kelly Harper. I would give her some of my Girl Scout cookies. Cliff McArdle's got them. They're mine.
Ain't nothing like those Thin Mints. Whew.
Man, Tagalongs is my favorite, but Thin Mints is second.
Man, Thin Mints are first.
Samoas? Thin Mints in the freezer. Anyone?
Money. Thin Mints Samoas? For the win. Thin Mints for the win.
I'm going Samoas is my number one. Nothing
Samoas
wrong with Thin
number
Mints.
Two for me.
Okay.
Because I like the coconut.
Oh, that's yeah.
I like the coconut.
Won't even touch them.
Solid.
Yeah, won't even touch them.
Right, give me yours.
So what are you? Yours is what, Darren?
Tagalongs, Thin Mints.
Oh, Tagalongs, Thin Okay.
Frozen.
Oh, yeah, frozen Thin Mints.
Frozen is key.
My daughter hooked me on that, yeah, some years ago.
Got to go frozen.
She was like, put those in a freezer. I'm thinking like, why? Oh, yep. I saw why.
Some things you got to go frozen.
Yeah, they're
good. I had Thin Mints last night, frozen.
Can't have too many of them, Darren.
Oh, I know, because I can't really.
You got a bad knee, man.
I can't get rid of them, you know? I can't really exercise like I have been. So, yeah, no, you're right. It's unfortunately, I wanted to keep going, but I'm like, I can't.
You
don't want to get radio butt.
That you do not want to get.
I don't want radio butt.
Some years ago, I bought from my niece Lennon. It had to be 30 boxes of Thin Mints because she's a Girl Scout, and I know I'm gonna have to buy some more this year. But I bought about 30 boxes of Thin Mints.
30 boxes.
Yes, it probably was more than that. I had to give them away, man, because I was eating them every day.
Yeah, you can't do that.
I just start giving them away. I just start packing them in my car and giving them away. This was some years ago. I think I might even brought some here.
Oh, I think you did.
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember that.
Goodness, man. I said, I won't do that again.
I think I remember taking home like 4 boxes.
Yeah.
Yeah, I do remember that. I think Derek was just like pulling up the lights, you know, when it was red and like, hey, want some Girl Scout cookies? Or just throw them at
just
people.
Giving them beat me, yeah.
Just
giving
going
them
through
away.
The neighborhood, just slinging them like the newspaper. Like you're the carrier. You're just throwing Girl Scout cookies on people's front porch.
Yeah, man. It was, I had to get rid of those things. I couldn't do it, man.
I wonder who thought of that. Who hatched that idea that's turned into just, I mean, it is amazing.
It's a gold mine.
Yes. Like how many do they sell? Every year, millions and millions and millions of boxes.
Especially if you see them outside the store, one of the grocery stores, you just can't walk in and walk out without buying a box. You just can't. Feel bad.
You see them in the store?
No, they're outside. The girls are outside the store selling them at the tables.
Yeah. Right.
You can't just walk by them going in and coming out without buying any cookies.
I wonder why they just don't turn it into a year-round thing and just put them on the shelves.
Because, man, it's just, if they do that, then it loses its luster.
Does it, though?
Yes. Because then everybody can get them. You can only get them certain times of the year. That's like the, what is that? The Christmas latte they have? No, the pumpkin spice latte.
Yeah, but that's.
You can only get that certain times of the year, right?
Yeah, but.
And they sell out.
Is that at the same level as Girl Scout cookies?
Not really. I'm not saying it is, but it's like, it's, if they were to sell that every day, then, you know, come Thanksgiving, nobody would really buy it because they're like, man, I can get that anytime I want to. It's kind of sort of like the Girl Scout cookies. Mm-hmm. Hmm.
To what Terry referenced when he joined us, I just saw on Pro Football Talk, the USFL lawsuit heads to court on March 16th, mm-hmm. so a couple weeks away, with an effort to prevent Fox from using the names and logo of the league. And eight teams, when they play, they're supposed to start in April. So this has been out there for a while. Like, why this now?
This,
like,
this is so silly. Who is the person? Is there somebody from the old USFL?
Yeah.
Like, but who is it? Is there a commissioner that's still alive from 1984 or 85? Like, is this the same guy that was sitting there when they sued the NFL and they gave him $6 or $3?
It was filed in a California
federal court. They won like $3 in the lawsuit, right? Hey, you've won the case against the NFL. Here is the settlement, $3.
Wow.
Is this the same guy? Like, hey, wait a minute. We might win more than $3 this time if we protect ourselves. Like, what?
Know.
Where is this coming from?
I can't find anything where it says where Who? This originated. Yes. It just said it was filed in a California federal court. But who? Who did it? Who
are they seeking?
Who's behind this?
Are they seeking compensation?
Is it Darrington Evans? Is he the one behind this?
Who? Man, I don't know.
I guess they just want in on the.
Is it Lee Corso?
Merchandise, if it sells.
Is it Lee Corso? Like, hey, listen.
Maybe.
It could be. I don't know. Somebody.
The paperwork supports the motion that the Fox-owned USFL is a counterfeit and that the use of the league and the team name and logos deceives the public into believing that it's the original USFL, which launched in 1983.
Okay, so who had the – so did Fox have the right to air those games then?
No, Fox didn't even exist back then.
Yeah, you're right.
That was ESPN had them, and ABC showed some games. They had the big games.
ESPN and ABC are affiliates,
they had Keith Jackson and Al Michaels and Howard Cosell doing the games, the big games.
They have big names doing the games now.
And ESPN had coverage of some of the the lower level games, and they'd play the heck out of those on repeat.
But you would have had to. You would think, okay, if ESPN, ABC, who I believe are affiliates, if they had the rights to the league, logo, name, image, all that stuff, then Fox, I'm pretty sure Fox would have talked with ESPN and bought it off.
Like, Disney didn't even own ABC and ESPN. ESPN was not bought by ABC, Disney at the time that league was going on, so much has changed. I don't even know what is still alive.
Who owns it?
Like, I didn't know
the
USFL was like a living thing. Like, did somebody fill out some paperwork just to keep like the trademark of the names and the logo?
That the USFL registered the property rights in 2011.
2011? That's still like 30 years after they played the games.
No, the new USFL. They're saying they went and registered the rights in 2011.
And if they were granted rights, then
what are we talking about?
Exactly.
So I don't know. I'm not a lawyer or a judge.
And I don't play one on radio either.
Yeah.
Sometimes.
So it doesn't seem like they've got anything, but.
I hope this doesn't hold up the season, though, because I am really excited about seeing it.
Are you really, though?
No, seriously.
You're really excited?
Like, I want to really see it. Like, I want to see if this can be sustainable, or is it just borderline gimmicky like XFL was. Because if it's legit, like, what was the other league?
The XFL.
No, not the XFL.
The American Football League.
No, that was overseas. That
NFL Europe.
Yeah, NFL Europe. If it's legit like NFL Europe, then I think it has some standing power.
And that was subsidized by the NFL. So exactly. that was the way to do it, really.
But they had players. They had guys that were on NFL rosters.
Yeah, like Tim Hasselbeck.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Or guys that were free agents and wanted to get NFL rosters, you know, coming out of college. So it was more legit. They took it serious. I hope it's the same with the USFL.
Viking Matt on our text line driven by Wilson County, Hyundai.com. Wanted to know, said, hello, fellas. Who else is on their second or third cup of coffee after being up all night watching the Preds and frozen Thin Mints and Tagalongs? All day.
Oh, yeah.
Frozen Thin Mints and Tagalongs all day, says Vikings Matt. Speaking of the Preds, we'll come back and we'll talk about that. We will talk to Elliot Friedman coming up at 1 o'clock. Willie will also give us his first installment of the field.
Oh, yes. Elijah and I have been preparing. We have color-coded stuff. Darren, I'll show you here if you look in your Zoom. Color-coded things. We're making very, very important decisions here. Amazing. This is big. This
very
is big.
Efficient.
The bubble watch. Elijah has the spiral notebook with meticulous notes.
Elijah's look more official.
And we're going to add a dimension. Elijah has officially been deemed in charge of seeds. He's the seeding guy. I'm the bubble guy. So together we're going to give you the whole field. We got it ready.
By the way, Matt on Chris on our text line says that he believes that D-Mace asked how many boxes will it take to win, and somebody told him 36, and he said, I'll take 36. You may be onto something. We'll come back, wrap up the second hour next. Want to go see Sammy Hagar at the Ryman Auditorium? It's coming up 5 days away next Tuesday. He'll be reunited with Michael Anthony. Jason Bonham will be there, son of John. But you're going to have to answer this question. You have to call in to Elijah and give him the correct answer, who is standing by at our Hillside Medical Game Studio, 615-737-1025. That's our phone line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Unfortunately, the Predators fell last night in Seattle to the Kraken, and two of the four goals by Seattle were by former Predators. Who were the two former Predators who scored last night in the Kraken 4-3 victory? Tell Elijah that answer, and you're going to Sammy Hagar at the Ryman on Tuesday. 615-737-1025. That's our phone line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Good luck with that. Chris Sanders coming up at high noon. There's really no other way to get around it. This is just a bad loss last night. And I know it happens in the league, and you know we talk about it any given night, and if you don't show up, you're going to lose in the NHL, and that goes for, you know, most professional sports. And the NHL is no different, but it's just a bad loss considering, you know, they're getting in that critical stage of the season. Man, that was game 54. I mean, every game now is vitally important. Watch the Blues lose to the Rangers in regulation before their game. Unfortunately, Dallas won, so they're not going away. And all these points are so critical, and Seattle's lost seven in a row and eight of their last nine. And, Willie, we talked about it in the first segment of pregame, and I even referenced, like, maybe that extra day, because typically you play Saturday and Tuesday. Maybe that extra day is to kind of get past the Stadium Series hangover, because that is a big to-do, and it was at home, and you've got family and friends. And that was a very active and emotional week last week for the Predators, but unfortunately that extra day didn't help, because I think John Hines put it best. They deserve, and Roman Josi said it last night, it's just a game they didn't deserve to win.
No, I think that is a really good assessment, because the score was close. The Predators had a 2-0 lead, and even at that point, when they took the 2-0 lead, only the score was in their favor. Everything else, they were struggling. They had been sort of outplayed. And then, of course, they really hit a lapse where they gave up three quick goals in less than 3 minutes. To their credit, they battled back and tied it. But really, throughout the game, from start to finish, you can look at any metric you want. They got outplayed. They got outplayed by Seattle. It reminded me a lot of the – because Seattle even has some guys hurt. Some of their better players are hurt. Mm-hmm. Reminded me of some Barry Trotz early Predators teams that just were scrappy. Last night, they played hard. They were a hungry team that hadn't won in a long time. They out-hustled the Predators. And this is not something you say about the Predators very often, but they just they weren't the quicker, hungrier team last night. It was Seattle that just took the game to them. And UC Saros wasn't magical like he has been so often. You put it all together and you come up short. But they absolutely did not deserve to win the game. They just got beat. They got beat by Seattle.
Now, can this be a situation where, because they've, I mean, if you look at it, last week was emotional. And
yes,
for those that have not played on a professional level, when you have, you know, I can only speak from a football standpoint, and I know, and from a hockey standpoint, it doubles because you're playing like with a day's rest. It's like back to back to back. The NFL is just like, okay, we play on Sunday, then we might turn around and play on Thursday, but it's just that it's so much emotion. Regarding that whole week, depending on what's going on, that's tough in itself. To play three games last week in such a short amount of time, and the type of games they were, these were not blowout games where the Preds were just blowing people out. You know, they won two out of the three, but they were all physical and close games. And this one was another physical, close game. Can they continue to play this way and expect to, you know, be in a position that they want to be in the end of the season?
It's a good question. I think there's going to be all kinds of think tanks, and you can play sports psychologists, but they just didn't play well. They didn't pass with any crispness. They didn't control the neutral zone very well. None of the things that they do well, they did last night. I mean, they didn't do any of that stuff. John Hines said it after the game. Our attention to detail, with and without the puck, not
that's
good.
Mental fatigue.
Not good. And I think there may be something to that. It would seem like, as Darren said, you had the extra day to reset. You feel like you should be all right. You know, Darren Pang on the telecast last night said, hey, they don't look like they have any legs. And you're sitting there going, how can that be? You haven't played since Saturday night. But I think it's the mental thing. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, you travel out to Seattle. And this is not to make excuses at all, because listen, they're now a bubble team. All of the cushion of they were safely in, mm-hmm. they have slid back now, and the other teams have pushed. They're in a dogfight to stay in that playoff spot. They're still in it. You know, they're still holding one of those spots, but it's precarious right now. They have work to do. So they've used up the cushion officially. They're in a bubble race now in a very competitive Western Conference. So all of that stuff is legit. I do think there may be absolutely something to that, Derek, but they can't afford to have lapses like that, because the schedule is going to, mm-hmm. It's going to be very tough. Look who's coming through here next week: Dallas, Anaheim, mm-hmm. and you've got a San Jose
Louis,
team.
Don't forget St. Louis.
Oh, St. Louis, and then Minnesota on a back to back.
Yeah, that's their week. That's their week.
Goodness. So you got San Jose sitting there between now and then. San Jose's no picnic to win up there. You know, over there, wherever you want, out west, that's been a tough place for anybody to win. San Jose's not a bad team; they're a better team than Seattle. So you better bring it on Saturday night. So all of these things that you want to figure out, you better figure it out quick.
A lot of people think that stretch in the second period where they gave up three goals in like 2:39 to be exact, less than 3 minutes, they gave up three goals. That was the difference. I mean, certainly it wasn't good, but I mean, those things happen. Like, to me, that was not the game. I think what was really alarming to me, and you tell me if you agree or disagree, was the third period. I mean, the third period was just blah.
Couldn't get anything
they
going.
They had two power plays that were just crap. I don't really know how else you could say it. I would think they would agree. They gave up a shorty, which happened to be the game winner. By the way, Colin Blackwell was one of the answers, and we'll get to that in just a moment. And then they had another power play. They didn't have a penalty in the game. Seattle never even got the man advantage last night. And then they had another power play opportunity, and it was again. It was terrible.
It was a nightmare.
Horrible.
It was a nightmare. They just couldn't get anything going. They just.
The third period was the difference for me. They got outshot 15-3.
Oh yeah,
in the third.
But that all to me, that all points to, you know, mental and physical fatigue. That's what it points to. Yes, they had time to rest, but after that emotional week, the time that they had to rest, what, a day? That's not going to, and you're traveling, that's not going to get you fully recovered, you know, to play.
Hopefully that's the tonic, you know, the jolt. Oh my gosh, what did we just do? We played a stinker against Seattle. Now, Seattle last night, if you saw the game, they had it packed. It was Kraken Day. It was a big celebration of we're a new team. I think they're over the fact that, hey, they're not Vegas. This is they actually look like a real, what you would think of an expansion team. They're not winning much. They got to look for the future. But that was a great environment for Seattle, and I think the Predators got ambushed a little bit. I don't think they were ready with all of what you're talking about after the emotions of last week. I hope that's the explanation, because they can play a lot better. That's probably the worst game I've seen them play in a long, long time, really, when you get down to it.
Yeah, I suspect they're going to look a whole lot different Saturday night in San Jose, because, you know, my guess is there'll be some real discussions after this one. I mean, you know, that everybody understands last week was a gauntlet. It was an emotional roller coaster, but – you know what? The league isn't going to feel sorry for
you.
They're going to keep winning games. Dallas is now nipping at your heels. They're right behind you. And as you mentioned, Willie, coming back after the San Jose game, when they come back next week is a massive week.
It's a walk through the tulips, okay?
They're not going to be able to tiptoe next week. Dallas, you got St. Louis in there. You got Minnesota in there. You got Anaheim. These are all teams you have to beat. They're all ahead of you or right behind you. And so it'll be yet again another massive week. But I think to me the difference was the third period. It wasn't the three goals in the second. Yeah, it wasn't good, but those things happen. They overcame that. They called timeout. Matt Duchene tied it up. New ball game. But, you know, okay, so you give up the shorty. But that was three minutes into the third period, and they never recovered from it.
What are they doing on the shorty? No urgency. They just let the guy.
Colin Backwell's a
nice player who has got to be excited to have the opportunity. He probably, I scored against. But that should never have happened the way it happened right there. Yeah, that was bad.
Can't do that. So, anyway, they fall 4-3. They'll play San Jose Saturday night. 7 o'clock puck drop against the Sharks. I'll have pregame for you at 6. We'll start the third hour with Chris Sanders. That's next.
Spring is sprung, and big savings are in full bloom at Menards. Visit Menards Garden Center for everything you need to get your garden growing. Choose from hundreds of beautiful, colorful flowers, lush trees and shrubs, and everything in between. Menards Garden Center is back in bloom. Stop in today to get your garden on. Check out fresh deals happening now at Menards.
Save big.